just like that, they buy it. They eat it up. You pander to them. You thank them. I mean, really, people, I thought you were a little bit smarter than that. I mean, it's just so easy to say the name of the city. You cheer.
Hey,
oh,
Stephanie,
cheer. I mean, just come on.
Welcome to the A Show.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the A Show, the Kings of Pro Wrestling Podcast. I am Justin, here with Meals. It's episode 121. We have a really packed show, so I don't really want to, we can't really waste time with the banter this week. We got a lot to talk about, Meals.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean,
You don't like banter. You don't like banter anyway. You don't like banter.
Banter? Anyway. I love banter. Banter is one of my all favorite pastimes. But if we have to... But if you have to exclude it from this week's show, I'm sure people will understand.
Because we'll be bantering in between, but it's just like,
I feel how like do we're you bantering do? About not bantering right now.
Yeah, but it's just like, you know, the how do you do? What's going on? Hey, Meals, you don't tell me how you're doing anyway. So,
yeah, because you know how I'm doing. We just talked for 10 minutes before this. Like, what? I can't fake the funk. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, okay. They'll never ask you to do radio. Let's get into No Holds Barred. It's been a busy week in wrestling, I must say. And we have to debut a new format, a new segment on the show that will be running all the way up until WrestleMania. So let's go right into No Holds Barred. First bit of news this week, as announced by WWE and as known by many people for at least 2 years since before they've announced, Simone Johnson, that's right, The Rock's daughter, has been announced as a trainee at the PC in Orlando. She's currently training to be a wrestler. I think this is one of the worst kept secrets in the world. It's been pretty clear that she's been, even just from her Twitter, from her Instagram, even some of the other women at the PC, you know, that she's been there for quite some time, just, you know, not on camera. But they finally did the announcement. There's supposed to be a big interview coming out with her and Charlie Caruso tomorrow, I believe. I don't know what channel it's going to be on, but they're making a really big deal out of this, Meals. How do you feel about it?
You know what? I don't know how to feel because I legitimately have no reaction one way or another. I don't know what to expect. I hope it's good. I never saw The Rock starter moving into professional wrestling. I mean, obviously, yes, you know, worst kept secret that we've talked about. Like, it's been hinted for a while. She's been around for a while. She's probably been at the PC because The Rock has visited the PC while she's been training. Mm-hmm. So, but I have no, I don't know her chops. I don't know her from a hole in the wall, to be honest with you. I don't know if she's got the gift of gab from her dad. I know nothing. So that honestly might be the best in this sort of situation that I know nothing because, you know, what if she's terrible? I don't know.
Oh, no, I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming.
Wouldn't it be the worst thing? Do you remember Michael Messi Jordan Neal. Jr.?
Or Marcus Jordan. Marcus Jordan.
Oh yeah, that was his name.
Marcus Jordan.
Who could forget all the David Flair?
Oh my god.
All the various.
But then you have Charlotte Flair. So that's like there's an exception to the rule.
But here's the thing.
Uh oh.
Like there is an exception to the rule. You know what? I'll say that. But let's see. The Rock doesn't have many kids, so he doesn't really have many exceptions to the said rule.
He has two. He has two. One of them, she can't even walk. So
yeah, so
yeah,
it might be the Charlotte one. To be honest with you, everyone's got a David. Everyone's got a Charlotte.
The second one is still in diapers right now, so it's going to be quite some time before we can see how that turns out. But what I did want to ask is, what's her finisher going to be?
Let's see. That's a good question.
She can't do the elbow. That's corny.
God.
Stay away from the
I don't even want to think about it, to be honest with you. To be completely real with you, I don't even want to think about it. Because, like, the generational rock talent, you know, rock's talent is talking. Wrestling was always secondary. For him to pass down any of the wrestling gene, it would be kind of weird. But passing down the talking gene, that would be amazing. But then also it's like, oh, come on, like Shao Guerrero. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many different instances where it's just like the generational stars.
Shao. Oh, Shao, okay.
Eddie Guerrero's daughter.
Yeah. But she doesn't even, like, she's like, isn't she still training too? Like, she was like a ring announcer.
Nah, she says it's a dub. Like, she said it's a wrap. Oh, like, yeah. We out of here. She's married to right. What's her face now?
Aiden English, right?
Yeah, there we go.
So. But she's a ring announcer on Glow, I believe, or Wow. No, she's a ring announcer on Wow on Women's Wrestling.
God bless her. You know what I'm saying? You know what? That's all I can say about Simone Johnson. God bless her.
God bless her.
She's going to be, how will I say this? She will be, how as they say in the biz, protected.
Well, I think, you know, my last thought on this, I think that there's never been a greater time for her to start in the PC than now with all the women there. So you've got Candice LeRae, you've got like Indy Hartwell, who she's really close with. You have a lot of women there that can really show her the ropes. And I think that she's going to get a lot of really good training there. So
I can't wait till she gets in it with one of Triple H's daughters when Triple H's daughter comes to the PC.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. They gotta bring that back.
History. Listen, talk about Mania main event right there.
It's gonna be different. It's gonna be a different. Think about how many ladder matches they'll have. Probably 10. Just like they're falling.
Plenty. God damn.
Next up on the docket, I'm really excited about this news. I know you are. WrestleMania is coming back to LA next year, March 28th. It's coming to SoFi Stadium, the new Rams and Chargers stadium. Every time I drive to work, I see this stadium. Trust me, it does not look finished. It looks very far from finished. I'm very concerned about them making the 2021 date. That's how unfinished it looks, Mills.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's supposed to open in the summer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think, you know, they might just have the structure completely thanged, and we're just looking at the finishes and all the other stuff like that. So you never know. I've seen people flip around buildings in like 2 weeks if people go. But since it's already announced, I'm assuming that they're going to want to, you know, speed up on the entire process for this thing. So, you know what? I'm excited that it's happening in L.A.
The question is, F all that. The question is, Meals, what's up? You got a year. You know it's coming, Mills.
Oh, wait. All right. First of all, let's run this thing back. Hold on. You knew. All right. Let's time out on this thing. Because obviously, yes, LA, duh, you live there. I got to be there. Turn up. Let's not forget last year at WrestleMania that you were supposed to come and then you never came.
Well, it was my birthday weekend.
Who cares? It's WrestleMania.
I went to Vegas.
So what? Of course, yes, it went to Vegas. I mean, God forbid I find something else to do that March 28th weekend. But
no,
now
you have no choice. You have to link.
First of all, you had no choice neither.
I'm a busy man. Hey, everyone listen to this show.
All right,
everyone listen to the show.
Bye.
Hashtag.
Now that it's in LA, it's a different story. When it was in New York City, it was listen. Suddenly I got plans for my birthday, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to hear all that cap. Listen, I'll be there. Listen.
Everyone listening who can hear the sound of my voice, hashtag Meals 2, number 2 LA, Meals 2 LA. We're going to get Meals.
First of all, J5 to NYC, please.
I am on an NYC strike, 10 years rolling. I'm not going. Meals 2 LA.
Wow. But you know what? I'm going to sit down. I might have to sit this one out too.
You going to take a knee?
Yeah, I might have to. This is egregious now. The point that I can get, you know, I have to come to L.A. and it's suddenly in my birthright to come to L.A. This is like WrestleMania in L.A., pal. It's Hollywood.
You got to get off the stoop. We worldwide.
Get off the stoop. NYC.
We worldwide.
NYC is right there.
I've been to New York before, though.
No.
You've never been to L.A.
I've not been to WrestleMania in New York. You have not been to WrestleMania.
I don't need to see that. I don't need to see that. You didn't even go last year. So what are you talking about?
So what? I was there for the entire weekend's festivities, bro. I was around. I was moving.
All right, hashtag meals to LA. Hashtag meals to LA.
Hashtag meals to LA because this is a lot of hypocrisy over here. Let's move on to the next topic.
Okay, whatever. What do you think the main event's going to be next year? That's what I had to ask.
Roman Reigns versus some jobber. Let's see.
The Rock? Okay, cool. All right, moving on.
No, I wouldn't say The Rock. The Rock seems like he's done. Whether it's in Hollywood or not, he was like, yo, I could just show up. I don't even have to wrestle. Like, it would be great. I think the lure of wrestling Roman Reigns would be there. But again, he's The Rock. Like, he show up and it's just different. You know what I'm saying? So that's all I got to say about that.
Whatever. Are you seeing this Burger Wars thing? On the timeline, people are arguing about burgers again.
What is it saying?
I don't know. It's the same in and out.
Slander. Well, listen. All right. We got a packed show. We can't talk about burgers right now.
All right. Fine. WWE has announced the Ruthless Aggression series. It's really a documentary, and much in the vein of the Monday Night Wars and their countless other Attitude Era documentaries, where now we're taking a look into the post-Attitude Era, the 2001 to, I want to say, probably 2009, 2010 era, where they... When did Ruthless Aggression end to you?
All right, so here's the thing. I and I'm glad I questioned the timeline before I did this. So what they say, generally the idea, there's two sentiments in terms of when Ruthless Aggression started. There is the night after WrestleMania 17, which I've decided I no longer agree with. And then there's essentially the night of the draft, which I agree with. I think it started, Ruthless Aggression era starts with the first ever draft that splits up the rosters, two different shows, two different things. In terms of where it ended, it seems to be a general consensus of it ends when WWE goes PG, officially goes PG, and everything kind of changes from there in terms of the way the show is presented, in terms of the jokes that they do, the lack of, you know, HLA or other random things that used to sort of perverse things that used to be on the show, bra and panty matches, all these other type of things that kind of end the Ruthless Aggression era, and then we head into the PG era for a bit. So that's kind of the timeline. Everybody's saying about 2002 to 2008. I'm excited for this.
I agree. To your point, I agree. But I do believe there is a post-mortem of the Attitude Era. There's a post-Attitude Era, like 2001.
I feel you. So I've always thought that, too. Like, I always said the Invasion Era or something along those lines. Like, along those lines. But I kind of want to lump it in because I still think it's part of, like, the Attitude Era. Yeah, I think it's kind of like
the epilogue.
Yeah, the epilogue. That's what I think. But I still largely lump it in because it seems weird taking an entire year and lumping into that era where there is no true distinct change outside of just more people. It seems weird to call that a different era. There was no true distinct change, and I've decided that eras are more defined by major events that are started instead of major events that end. Right. Things start and become a new era. There's a new feeling. There's a new thing. Things ending do not mark pretty much a new era. Like, it just doesn't. But we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah. I'm excited for this as well. It looks really cool. It looks like there's a lot of stock footage and a lot of stock interviews from interviews they did like years ago.
I'm better not see Eric Bischoff with black hair.
That Eric Bischoff interview has been used
for. It's got mileage on it. It's got super mileage on it. I was like, damn, you guys interviewing for 3 hours? How are we still using this footage?
There's an old Cena like interview in there too. It looks like it was from like 2012.
And I think they're probably going to use that old Stone Cold footage from his DVD of him talking about walking out. Yeah. So it seems like they're going to use that. But, you know, I'm still excited. I'm excited to hear modern day WWE superstars talk about that era to them. That's what I'm interested in.
Next
and
up,
then there's also they. Sorry. They also announced like who's in the documentary. They showed who's in the documentary. I think it's Mark Jindrak is in the documentary.
Yeah.
What's his face? The loud guy that I hate.
Loud guy. You hate a lot of loud guys.
Southern guy used to carry a tennis racket.
Oh, Cornette.
Yeah, him, Bischoff, Pritchard. Oh, you know all the folks. But yeah.
Next up. Scott Dawson deactivates his Twitter. This is the next chapter in the revival drama. I was originally going to pitch that we do like a revival watch or a some type of, you know, how we did Sasha Banks watch. I opted against putting it in the notes. Just really quick, you know, I just think it's getting out of hand. I don't think that they're a tag team that deserves this much rope, if you will.
I think they incite a lot of things from the people, and a lot of it is for the audience that AEW kind of caters to anyway. That kind of like, I would say the, you know, self-proclaimed wrestling purist type of thing that feels like superstars should be used in a certain way as opposed to a different way. I think him deactivating is probably the best. I think it's probably presented a lot of stress, anxiety, and a lot of hate that's come towards him, and I support it. But I also support them leaving because it just seems like they should just leave now. Like, yeah. I'm kind of tired of it.
I'm over it. I think that they, and we talked about this with Sasha, like they perpetrate an issue in which they already know that the type of attention that it will bring. Like, you know what these tweets bring. You know what's going to happen when you tweet certain things. You know the type of attention it's going to bring. And it, like, I hate to say, like, I feel like this era of like taking to Twitter and doing this, it's getting played out this year. Like last year, it was really cool and like very like fourth wall breaking and really awesome. This year, it's been really like, I think it peaked with ACH, right? Last year, like this trope of talent going online, like it peaked with that. And now it's just sort of like, okay, guys, we can cut it now. You know, if you have contract disputes, just dip or just handle it, you know, behind the scenes. Like Rusev's doing. I think Rusev's doing a funny, you know, it's funny that he's off TV, but it's clear that there might be a contract dispute. Even though on Raw they showed that he would be in Saudi Arabia for Super Showdown, but he's not going public with it. You know.
Well, I think he wants the bag more than anything, and maybe that's what he's deciding on. But also, like, I mean, also tell that to Matt Hardy, right? To like cut it out. But
please, Matt.
No, but you know, it is what it is. We can talk about Matt too, like, because I kind of want to talk about that, how that happened.
We'll talk about it now or on Raw.
No, we can talk about it on Raw. But you know what? I support him. If he deactivates his account, let's end this sort of thing before it gets too messy and it kind of ruins the narrative. I actually do like the revival. I would rather see them somewhere else. If they want to be somewhere else, I would rather see them somewhere else. Whether they'll be used in whatever way, it's again, whatever company you sign to kind of owns what you become. Your property. And I don't want to say property like you're, you know, like what you were saying, but you're like your intellectual property. They can kind of do what they want with you. So maybe it's best for them to, you know, not immediately jump to AEW, but unless they get creative control, which, I mean, I wouldn't give them creative control. Again, they're still relatively new. They're just really good. But, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, let's move on.
Yeah, real quick. Did you get a chance to listen to the Brandi Rhodes interview that came out yesterday?
I listened to the brief part. Where she talked about how whatever ghoulish thing that she had going on went awry.
Yeah. Very odd, right? That once again, there seems to be a hand, you know, right hand doesn't know what the left is doing type thing in AEW. Where,
yeah, I think it's bad. I mean, I think just to speak about it as candidly like that, I'm not completely mad about it, but I'm also like, this kind of seems counterproductive.
I feel like we shouldn't be hearing that, right? Like, I feel like you're being
too transparent. They were doing something, and it was like, I don't know what that was all about. Like, really?
Then why'd you do it? Like, yeah. Right? Like, Like there should, you should have never agreed to this. So I let, you know, and this is shout out to the War Report who listen to that podcast. But if you're aware of what's going on at AEW, there was a stable that she was a part of called the Nightmare Collective just a week ago, a week and a half ago, really. They got broken up and everyone was wondering what happened. And she went on the show with Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervive, and she basically aired her frustrations and also basically wiped her hands clean and blamed her.
I don't think she was on the show for that purpose. It was just spoken about.
The timing's a little weird for her to have a random interview. The timing's very up. They don't have a pay-per-view coming up until the end of the month.
No, until the end of the month. Yeah, they got a pay-per-view coming up.
But you usually don't do press on that until literally 7 days out. You don't have to do press on that until like 7 days out.
I'm not sure. I didn't listen to the entire interview. I would hope she wasn't just brought on to be asked about the Nightmare Collective.
It was only about 30 minutes. Not much was talked about, and that was the largest part of that interview.
Well, yes, obviously. I mean, because it kind of opens up. This is the first time we're kind of hearing about the creative process. It isn't the first time that we're hearing kind of like negative things about the creative process, but it's probably the most prominent thus far, considering who it's coming from. I implore everyone to listen, because it kind of seems like they're still trying to get the kinks out of whatever the hell they're doing. They tried their best with a sports entertainment kind of storyline. It didn't really work. I think all parties involved. I mean, you knew Kong was going to go do her show, and I think they all decided for the best. Maybe we should, you know, cut our losses with this. I think, in my opinion, from what I saw about it, it was kind of a stupid gimmick. I wasn't really like, oh wow, like we're cutting the hair off of random women and putting them in a belt. Like, I didn't like it. It just seemed like they could be used, Kong and Brandy could be used in different ways, and not as active competitor Brandy at all.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I'm not a fan of her as an, I feel like she's, in my opinion, in terms of Brandi Rose, and I definitely said this on the timeline, I think at some point, I don't think she should be an active competitor. There's no reason why she should be wrestling on random television shows, especially considering her status in the company. If you want to get the most out of
even consider herself a wrestler, according to the interview. Like she's not wrestling a lot. She's not going to be wrestling a lot. But here's some things that really tripped me up about that interview is that, like, she's saying that some shadowy person in the organization told her to do these things. So who was it? Like, who was the person who told her to get on the mic and bury Britt Baker and Riho that one time during that match that everyone hated? Whose idea was it? Like, I feel like if you're going to come out and say it, go all the way and say it and don't be like, you know who told me to do this type thing. Like, it's just really odd to me that she do that. But it also feels as though to me she didn't consult with anyone before she did it.
Right. It seems like the thing where the whole Steve Stout Knicks thing that also happened today, where Steve Stout on public television and started saying some things, and then Knicks had a kind of like retractive statement. It's kind of embarrassing just overall. Even first of all, it's embarrassing as a Knicks fan, and then it should also be embarrassing for like AEW in terms of like what's actually going on. It's interesting.
Somebody wanted that story out. I'll just say that much. That's how I feel. That's how I feel. Sorry, let me not talk like I have a stake in this, but I feel like someone wanted that story out, and she went and did this random interview because Cody did one right after that. Mm. And the actual content of his interview is completely different from hers. It's just really odd. That's all. It's just really odd. It just feels like we get two different company lines with AEW sometimes, and I just really want people to pick up on the communication issues. And I'm not saying no company has them. WWE has them all the time. I just think that, you know, let's you know, retain that same energy, right?
Gotcha.
So we have a new segment called Our Mania Moment. So every week until WrestleMania, me and Mills will be talking about a special moment that happened at WrestleMania, from the good, the bad, the ugly, and the weird. This week, I want to start it off a little bit easy. I want to give a low ball. Right here, so to speak. The year is 2001. The month is April 1st. The month is April. The day is the 1st. It is WrestleMania X7. I mean, considered to many to be the best WrestleMania of all time. I don't know.
I Meals as the best WrestleMania of all time.
I like last year's WrestleMania a lot. I think last year's WrestleMania is the top five.
I think WrestleMania 17 holds so much as a part of it. Like the actual, it's a beautiful snapshot of what everything was in the WWE, how many stars they had, everyone on the show. Even if some of the stars weren't active, they, you know, participated in the show, and kind of how loaded the roster actually was.
I think last year was like that too. No, last year everybody on it.
I agree. I just feel like this show is just so important. And we're going to talk about one of the reasons why it's so important, because that's what we're talking about this week. But it's just so important. And then also, like, less of an, also the culmination of an entire era, just period.
Yes. Yeah. And we alluded to this a little bit earlier. The moment I want to talk about is Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock had a main event. And really one of the most, I would say this is still the best WrestleMania main event of all time. And at the end of that match, of course, Austin wins the match. But before that happens, Vince McMahon starts helping Stone Cold, throwing a chair into the ring, and mercilessly bludgeoning The Rock with it, which leads to him winning the match, shaking hands with Vince McMahon in an iconic image that I don't think anyone will ever forget in their lives, young or old. And it's just like one of the most epic moments of all time, really, in wrestling. I really want to talk about the story leading to it, because I think that, you know, one of the greatest parts about this is that none of us saw this coming, but we should have, right? Because of what Stone Cold was saying throughout the months and the weeks leading to it. I mean, he had expunged all of his demons. He had lost to Triple H. That was over in No Way Out, and he was facing The Rock. But the thing with this was that he needed the title, but he felt as though he was losing a step. He had to beat The Rock. I have to beat you. And even in the video package, and I just looked at it today, he says it countless times in the video package. And I think that the storytelling here is so on point, because you're thinking that he has to beat him because he just wants to be the best, but he has to beat him because he's obsessed with the title.
I think, you know, in terms of the story, I think you summed up the story leading into it very, very well. I kind of want to take a look at the analytical side, like behind the actual story itself. Because you said that this is one of the most iconic, you know, moments, one of the most iconic photos of Stone Cold shaking the hand with the devil, Vince McMahon. And I think they thought it would represent a lot more. But I actually do think now, as we're here 19 years later, it means a lot less. Because I think the narrative around that actual moment has been so muddied with the fact that Stone Cold Steve Austin thought it was a misstep to actually do this. Yeah. Like, beyond the fact that it actually happened, and I think if we didn't have those conversations, it probably would mean more. But the last conversation for the last 19 years, more so over the last decade about it, was that I think I shouldn't have done that. And I think Stone Cold, in terms of regretting it, I think he regrets it. And I think the decision was fueled by the fact that, and I think there was some insecurities with his position in the WWE, especially compared to The Rock. I think The Rock was on the uprise. The Rock was about to do movies. The Rock was about to be out of here. I think his popularity in terms of crossing over was so mainstream, and Stone Cold coming back from his injury didn't really feel like he had enough of that push, enough of that, you know, that momentum, all that type of thing. He didn't feel like the most undisputedly popular person in sports entertainment. So I think he tried to make the decision to go heel in this aspect, basically because he felt like he wasn't necessarily, he felt kind of, I don't want to say inadequate next to The Rock, but he kind of felt like the tides were turning and the moons were shifting. And the momentum-wise, The Rock would have continued to go up. And I think he felt like his character was the same old thing for the last number of years, and it was dipping off.
He was. I mean, and by all means, he was. Like, he was running out of, I think after Triple H, he had, you know, there was Rock again. Of course, he could have gone after Angle, you know, Benoit again. But after that, it becomes a rerun of the same feuds he's been doing since the beginning. And I think that, you know, I'm of the mind that I think that he's a little too, like, as far as money goes, yes, it was probably a bad decision. As far as his character goes, I think he became 10 times better after he turned heel in 2001. I think that he was immediately hated, and that's very rare to do for someone who is, like, imagine if Cena finally, exactly, imagine if Cena went heel. I feel like he'd be booed. Not booed, I feel like he'd be cheered. Or Roman Reigns goes heel tomorrow. He's going to be cheered. Mm-hmm. It's very hard as a top guy to go heel and be heel and stay there. I think the only guy that on the roster right now that can do that and be hated and you know in a real way is probably like AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. Those are the only two guys I've seen do it.
I think Stone Cold Steve. I mean, I think he said it did definitely help in terms of like, all right, let's add another layer. Let's add another wrinkle. Let's kind of figure something out. I think it extended the creativity. I think it extended his like life expectancy in the WWE, like his in terms of the creative things that you could do with it. And even if it was legitimately only for 6 months. But then again, so here's the thing, right? Like, it's for 6 months. He comes back from injury. He does this. He does WrestleMania 17. It extends it for like maybe like 5 or 6 months during the summer where he's on the invasion. He's doing all these things. And then he's turned right back. And then you look at it 3 months later, he's gone.
Yeah.
Like, I think what this represents more than anything is that he was trying to continue to prolong the Stone Cold Steve Austin character because he saw that a new kind of shift was happening. It was happening with The Rock. I think eventually if he managed to stay long enough and he managed to meet up with Cena and Batista, it would have looked a lot more evident. And that this, I think this represents, you know, so much in terms of just how WWE shook down after it.
Do you feel like this killed? Do you feel like this killed the business in a way?
Nah, I think buying WCW definitely killed the business, but I think it killed Stone Cold's brand. I think, but there is no actual plan. So here's the thing: I'm not totally against going heel, but I think in just the way that it happened to me, I wouldn't have done it in this way. Like, I wouldn't have had it so closely associated with, like, Vince McMahon. I would have had to. And I think if he does it now, there are a lot more shades of gray than I'm doing this, you know,
But on the biggest stage at the last final match, and they don't end manias like this very often, mm-hmm. where there's a huge shift.
A story,
I mean, I think
there's a story that kind of ends it. Yeah,
like I think like if we were to do the way that you're saying, maybe he cheats to win, but he doesn't necessarily full on go to McMahon. Maybe the Raw after Mania, he does it right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe does that make to as survival maybe. Right?
Maybe, yeah. And I think that there's definitely a way that you can do it there. And I love the way we're talking about it now and kind of analyzing it, you know, 20 or so years later, where, well, wow, it's almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
Almost, right? Wow. Mm-hmm. But
19, yeah.
I think that, you know, maybe he does do it differently. Maybe it's a longer buildup. Maybe, you know, it is prolonged. Maybe that's the way. But I feel like in the moment, I think he was totally into it. I think he was totally for it, and I think the programs right after proved it. You know where I think it really messed up at? When Triple H came back and they did the two-man power trip. That's where I think it messed up. I think Triple H should have just turned face.
No, yeah, I agree. I agree 100% because there's no reason to kind of put them together. Once again, I think all of these are kind of props to continue to prolong his entire... It was a story that I don't think was like... I don't think they did... In terms of just like the magnitude of it, putting, you know, I guess Stone Cold next to Triple H was supposed to make him hate it more, but Triple H is really good at what he does. So once again, it's like you're putting him in the vicinity of this person and
a better heel.
Yeah, his star is kind of dwindling at this, you know, at this aspect. First, just that entire moment for me. I was shocked as a kid. I can say
that. Did
you see
it live? Did you see it live?
No, I didn't see it live. I was too poor to buy pay-per-views. I saw it on WWF.com the following morning, as I used to do, because I couldn't buy pay-per-views. So I would legitimately wake up in the morning before school, plug in whatever dial-up that I had, go on WWF.com and see what happened, and you see the handshake, and I'm like, whoa. So I could talk about it in school, like, because my friends who had illegal cable, I'm supposed to rat them out. Is my mic on? who saw it, and they would be able to tell me about it, and we'd have these conversations about it. But I remember just being so amped for that Raw the following night. And they had a great Raw the following night because The Rock tried to get his revenge. They do the rematch. That's where the two-man power trip came in, blah, blah, blah.
OD. I think they literally, to me, ruined it the next night. Literally in 24 hours, they ruined it.
Yeah. I think it was a misstep. But
you want to
appreciate the moment because it's always talked about. It's not even talked about in the context of like story anymore. None of this is talked about in the context of like, because the entire story for The Rock and Stone Cold is kind of like shifty, because from my memory, Deborah was involved and then Deborah stopped being involved. And there's so many different things that didn't get to heat up until pretty much the last week. But no one remembers that because this moment is never talked about in context of the story. This moment is to talk about in context of Stone Cold and how it kind of ruined his character.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just would have had Triple H come out. I don't think he should have like helped Rock, but I think Triple H coming out and fighting Austin and then them having like a triple threat off would have been like really dope. To me,
it would not have killed them to not put Triple H anywhere near Stone Cold.
That's true.
Triple H slowly changed to a face, and as he sees Stone Cold as his heel growing, maybe you have Triple H for a heel for a month or two longer, and he does his own thing, and Stone Cold do his own thing. And as he sees that heel, eventually they cross paths. And you know where they cross paths? Because if they never team up, Triple H never tears a squad. they cross paths when the invasion thing actually happens. That's where they cross paths. They cross paths where Stone Cold is now the head of WCW, ECW, and Triple H represents the WWF, and now people are forced to cheer for Triple H. That's where they cross paths. But they kind of like, I think it's a lot of lack of faith.
They rushed it.
Stone Cold being a heel. No, I think it was a lack of faith, to be honest with you. They didn't know if people could actually hate Stone Cold Steve Austin. And maybe they're right. I mean, it shakes down the way it shakes down. But obviously, in terms of the match itself, the intensity, the back and forth, what it kind of meant, WrestleMania 17 as a whole is the culmination of the Attitude Era, in my opinion, especially when you take a look at previous WrestleManias like WrestleMania 14, 15, 16, where they're in random arenas and stuff. And WrestleMania 17 is 70,000 strong in the Astrodome. Like, to me, this is the pinnacle. And this moment kind of like, it's not remembered as fondly.
Yeah. It culminates in a lot of things, but I love doing this. We're going to do this next week. I got a really cool pick for next week. But yeah, that was our Mania moment for this week. Stone Cold Steve Austin joins Vince McMahon in 2001. So go back and watch that. Let's get into SmackDown really quick. How'd you feel about the show?
I don't want to talk about it because this show, man, SmackDown, it does everything wrong spectacularly. Now, you know what? I don't want to say that because it doesn't do everything wrong. There are people who generally enjoy this show. I can just honestly say for myself, I don't agree with whatever's happening on this show like 90% of the time.
Okay, let's get to something that I think you do agree with, and that is The Fiend facing Goldberg in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, that'll be fun. I mean, it's better than what was billed on commercial.
Yeah, the Kane thing.
Versus Kane.
That was a good swerve, though. I got to say, it was a good swerve to swerve us on that one.
You think WWE's purposely putting out false information and promoting it to swerve us?
I think this car is subject to change. I never hold anything that they say to any type of seriousness.
That would be fire.
There's been a lot of back and forth on who should win, who shouldn't win. I think we all know, just for business sake, you know, you want to get to Roman and The Fiend in Tampa. But I think this will be I worry about the Fiend's indestructibleness and having Roman be the guy to do this. I'm very concerned about that, because if Roman is the guy that can defeat this unbeatable thing with no nerfing, and I think there needs to be some type of nerfing of the Fiend before they do it, and some type of storyline explanation for it. Because if Roman beats him, then no one should ever be Roman, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I'll be honest with you. This Fiend Goldberg thing, it's interesting on paper. However, if you had to ask me, as we're here, the show airs February 12th, who's going to win this match? I'm going to say the Fiend. Because I felt like so much stock has been put into it, and for them to pull the rug out in the middle of February.
Yeah. Makes no sense.
Yeah, it makes completely no sense. So I think this heads to WrestleMania, because then, bro, what do you do with the Fiend, to be honest with you, leading into WrestleMania? But I think it's a good program. I'm interested in seeing how they handle it. Like, really, yeah. Does Goldberg take the pin, like the clean pin?
It's just weird. It's just weird that, like, the Fiend's been feuding with people that he's had problems with for the past year, mm-hmm. and he hasn't really had any problems with Goldberg at all.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just weird. No, you're right.
You want to talk about the women's match at the end of the show, or the racial angle?
I wouldn't say racial angle. I would say, like, well, actually, I feel like they're doing the Kofi thing again, aren't they?
They are. They're 100%
doing. Are they typecasting Naomi into the Kofi Kingston role? Because that's kind of what it seems like. But first of all, there's so many things wrong. Like, what?
It's diminishing returns, because no one has elicited even half the reaction to what happened on Friday as they did when Kofi lost that gauntlet match.
Because I think people expect it to a certain point, but there's so much, like, so we had that fatal four-way, right? It's promoted heavily throughout the show. First of all, I think the match is bad. Anytime that Naomi and Alexa Bliss were in the ring, which is like, wow. Carmella wins by pinning Naomi, which to me is like, what? There were three other people in this match.
Gotta, like, erase all doubt. Gotta erase all doubt. Bruce Pritchard.
To me, I'm just like, wait a minute. But you know, the crowd, you're building up to this. Obviously, they're going to do the Naomi versus Bayley match. But why have Naomi take the pin? Huh? I'm so confused by that. So Carmella wins. It's immediately an afterthought because Bayley shows up and kicks her shit in. But I just don't. I see if they're just. Because Carmella is getting the title shot on Friday, like she just is.
Yeah.
So,
there's no pay per view, so they kind of have to do this. There's no pay per view this month.
I mean,
that they can be on. They're gonna get another weekend off.
Sounds great to me. No, actually, they don't get the weekend off. They get the weekday off. Like,
oh yeah, you're right.
They get to hang out and do whatever the hell they do while SmackDown Superstars got to fight back on the planes and try to get back in the country before 8 p.m.
It's happening Friday. I mean, we know what's going to happen. So,
yeah, I'm not a Carmella. She's this is a disservice to Carmella, because no one thinks she should be there.
Wow.
And there's no story to it.
That's Messy Mills talking. She's you know, a two-time.
What's she done? She hasn't even been there.
She got hoisted over the boxes by Bianca last November. That was pretty cool.
She hasn't done anything to deserve this, so I think it does a disservice for her for them to put her in the match. But let's see what old Bruce Pritchard has got up his sleeve.
But listen, I be giving Bayley a lot of crap. She's been having to work. With some real,
her roster's cut for her. Exactly. I'm interested in the conversations that she's having when she's on the road. Maybe with Sasha.
Lacey again.
First of all,
I know she's been begging for Naomi. I know she's been begging for Naomi.
You see how Lacey hasn't shown up since she got beat, right? She wasn't even in a fatal four way. Sad. Yeah. She's out here filming friggin' hot dog commercials or something. I don't know. I don't want to talk about this anymore. This is let's get why
racial language.
Yeah, why even waste our time? Like SmackDown is so garbage.
The Daniel Bryan, he's angry. Where do we think? Are we still thinking Undertaker? Are we still hoping for Undertaker at this point?
I don't know anymore. They seem very they seem like very like blasé on terms of what they do. Maybe it'll be Undertaker. Sheamus. I don't know.
I'm not thinking Sheamus though. For some reason, I'm really not thinking Sheamus right now.
Well, first of all, why is Daniel Bryan so angry?
Because he lost.
Yeah, but so he lost before. Like, this isn't his first time losing to the Fiend, but why is he so angry? Like, that's what I mean, he beat up Heath Slater. I think Heath Slater's, you know, in that moment may have been annoyed, and I can understand. Because Kofi did the same thing. Kofi was out here antagonizing The Miz after he lost to The Fiend. And, you know, that's why Kofi had to get his shit kicked in. But that's why you do it with Heath, too, because he seemed kind of annoying. But I'm not sure where we're actually – to be honest, I have no idea where we're going with this. He's not going up to Saudi Arabia, so I have no idea where we're going with this.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But that's what makes it interesting, because Brian – it seems like a couple people have mania directions on these shows other than the Saudi Arabia stuff. So Brian's direction is going to Elimination Chamber. Bailey, Naomi, Carmella, they're going towards Elimination Chamber or Mania or whatever happens. Everyone seems to be going and converging on different timelines on these shows. And I just think it's really interesting, like, especially for the people that are not going to Saudi Arabia. The Otis Valentine's Day montage, I really enjoyed. That's the last thing. That's the last thing in my notes from SmackDown.
Meh.
Oh boy, the Friday's gonna be hilarious. Friday's gonna be good.
I'm sure Friday should close the show. To be honest, if they want to be really real, that should close the show, and they should have a whole sort of thing planned. But I'm also concerned. Like, so you do that, you end the show. It's going to be a shocking ending. Like, it ends up being Mandy Rose actually turns on Otis or something along those lines.
I don't think there's been enough for her to turn on him yet. I don't think that's going to happen.
You can look at her and hate her. Like, why would people hate her? She's more beautiful than anybody else.
You want to milk her turn a little bit longer than like less than a month. You know, like they just now started.
But then also it's like, what's truly the payoff for her turning heel on him?
Yeah, like, there is none.
That's not gonna happen.
Yeah,
like tag team match.
He's in a tag team already. So I think the swerve would be Sonya, right?
Mm. Yeah.
The swerve should be Sonya turning on, because I think they've set it up. I think they're setting it up to be like Tucker or Sonya are mad, but I think Tucker's just really wanting to look out for Otis. But Sonya might actually be mad about this.
What an NPC that Tucker is, man.
Yeah, hey, he don't got the funny dance moves, so you gotta play.
What an NPC. Yeah,
you gotta play the left, bro.
No, that'd be great. That'd be great. I've been looking for a Sonya Deville moment, so that'd be great.
Yeah, she needs one. Let's go to Raw. Let's finish out the show strong.
Great show. Let's do that. Lou, you got lots to talk about on Raw. I'm ready now.
What a fun show. Shayna, I couldn't even really be mad at the Asuka thing for that long before we saw something ridiculous to make us forget about it. And I got to thank Heyman and his team for doing this. Shayna Baszler.
I always thought Asuka was going to lose, by the way. Yeah, I always thought Asuka was going to lose. I was not disappointed, because I was like, oh, she's going to lose on Raw.
Yeah. So Shayna Baszler shows up, does her beat down. Then it gets real. It starts getting real, like the horror music started playing, like some Pop Smoke beats started playing when she took the mouthpiece off, and she gets down on her knees.
Giant chompers.
Yeah. And she bites Becky. I thought it was on her dome, like her head. Like, I thought it was the back of her head. It ended up being her neck, because her back of her head was bleeding. But she bites Becky on her neck. She like pulls her face up, and it's just a mouthful of strawberry preserves in her mouth. Frightening scene on Raw. USA is letting them do whatever the hell they want to do on that show. I'll tell you that much.
My face was like, huh? Like, that was my face. I was like, what? I don't think they're ruining anything, but I'm just legitimately like,
there are people that thought that that was, and here's my thought about this bite angle. Before Becky drove the ambulance out of the arena,
which is really the egregious part of this entire
thing. Yeah, I think that's the part
she drove herself to the ambulance and then drove herself back.
That's the part y'all should be side-eyeing, not the actual biting part. I thought that for someone like Shayna, who we just saw in November beating up people from behind every single week, and that's what she did, this was a nice twist on something that we've already seen her do 1,000 times to Becky and Bayley and everybody on the main roster, right? Like, we knew she was going to come from behind. That's her MO. This really makes it seem like it's personal. Like, she really does not like Becky at all. And she wanted to humiliate and harm her. Like, this is the first person who it feels as though, and that's why the Asuka thing makes sense, by her Becky beating her demon, she runs right into another one, and one that really does want to hurt her. Asuka just wanted to beat her. Shayna wants to literally maim her, and I think that's what's going to separate her from everyone in the main roster, and I think that is something that is really going to be remembered about what happened with Shayna here this week. Now, when Becky, you know, is selling it during the commercial, I thought that was cool, that was great. Did this bitch bite me? I thought that was a great line. You get to the back, then she's pushing medical personnel and she's getting into the car and driving it away. I don't think that's badass. I don't know about you, Mills. That just looked corny to me.
No, it looks a bit corny, to be honest with you. I wasn't really feeling that part of the entire thing. In terms of the actual biting on the neck, this is like some abstract movie. Because to me, I'm trying to like picture 5 years down the line, we're remembering Shayna Baszler's first moment and legitimately biting someone in the neck and making them bleed. And I'm kind of like trying to figure that out within the context of the rest of her career. And I could see why people would be mad and be like, this is ruined. I think it's an overstatement to say that she is ruined, but I do think it's an accurate statement to be just questioning them, like, why? Because it takes the bit of a realism that, you know, Shayna had, like, is she going to go around biting everybody? That's what I'm really concerned about. Or was this only a one-time biting thing?
I took it as she really doesn't like Becky. Like, it to me, to bite someone, that means it's like a personal, like,
The context of the bite for me, the context for the bite for me was like, she just decided to go down and chomp on her. It wasn't like, I really hate you, da-da-da, but I felt like she just... I don't know.
I guess. Think it's established that she doesn't like her, but not to that level. I think, like I said, she wants to maim her. Like, she wants to harm her. I looked at it like Tyson. Like, this is who Heyman is portraying her to be, is the someone who is like literally will do anything to win. And I think that there's a level of, again, on NXT, there's a level of realism that, you, quote unquote, I'm using quotes here, that you can have with Shayna that translates well to Full Sail, but will not translate well to the people in the nosebleeds, so to speak. No pun intended. This immediately sets her apart. Now, this isn't to say that she's going to go around biting people or that she's going to be any different than what she was in NXT, but to reintroduce her, also as someone who lost this Survivor Series, now, I mean, she may not have been pinned, but she definitely like still lost. You know, this is how you introduce her and say, you know what, she's not right in the head. You know, she's a cutthroat individual. And I think that's a good way to reintroduce her. And I agree, Mills. Like, I'm with the people who might be confused. I'm not with the people who are saying she's ruined. She's not ruined at all. I think if anything, it makes her look really ferocious. I think we need to wait and see. But I do think that I'm a huge fan of this angle so far.
I like the fact that it's a statement. I don't like the statement at all. I'm just not the neck thing. It just seemed weird. It was kind of very left. I don't know if it's more abstract, but to me, it was just kind of left. Kind of came out of nowhere. Especially we haven't seen blood on WWE television in years.
I don't want to see the same thing over and over again.
No, I agree. But that doesn't mean that what they present from you, because it's different, that doesn't mean it's any.
What should she have done?
That doesn't mean that we should accept it. I mean, there could have been a million things that she could have done. She could have, you know, chair? Nah, but you're suggesting things, but obviously we're not going for the same things, but there are a million different things that could have been done. In terms of biting someone in the neck, to me, it just looked wild from an aspect.
So they bleed?
Yes. How long have you bitten people on their neck? But it's like, to me, that's what's so, it's just like, it's weird to me. Like, it's weird actually, like, considering all of that. It struck me as left of this entire kind of what she's about and all these other stuff, because she's never been anybody before, nor even been in that type of thing. Shayna Baszler's entire character has been sort of not really rabid.
But people don't. So, not everybody watches NXT, and we know this.
Nah, but that's not the point though, because she's been on WWE TV. Like,
yeah, but she was just a goon in November.
Nah, but she's never been like rabid, is what I'm saying. That's why it kind of struck me as left, because it's never been for her, and especially when you see everything moving forward, I still think it won't feel that way. But we'll see how it goes.
I feel like you're talking from the perspective of someone that's seen her in NXT and beyond. And I think that this is an attempt from the writing team to give her an identity and to give her a target. And I don't think the biting thing is going to go past this week, but I think as a first statement, you want to injure the champion to let everybody know that you're not messing around. And that's what that's what I took it as. No more, no less. Right. Drew McIntyre kicked the chopper suit off of MVP this week. How do you feel about MVP coming back again?
He can talk. I can take it or leave it. Yeah, I can take it or leave it. I think it was a great segment in terms of like, let's flip it around and let me try to make you my manager. Oh, I'm getting kicked in the face suddenly. Like, I thought it was a great segment in terms of it just wasn't a talking piece. They actually tried to do something, and it may lead to a match next week and may need. I mean, he said he's formally retired from the ring and he's not doing that anymore. But it kind of, there was obviously within this segment, it wasn't just I'm this talking head, say things in terms of Drew McIntyre, say things, MVP, I'm this talking head. MVP tried to incite Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre responded back. It was kind of a story told with two people in the ring. I appreciated that more than anything. Shout out to Ballin' Drew.
I was going to get to that. I almost said racial angle for the kick on Black History Month. I almost hit up some of the constituents on Twitter from Europe about this. But then when Drew McIntyre did the ball and I fell in love with him all over again. I've turned the corner on Drew McIntyre. Okay.
He's good.
I'm a fan.
He's good.
I'm a fan.
He's doing his thing.
From henchman to head honcho, the Drew McIntyre story. I'm with it.
It's the role he was always meant to play.
Meet the Drew, Volume 2. thoughts on Angel Garza Week 2 really quick. I thought his match was I thought a squash to Cedric was spectacular. No racial angle there. But I think that what he's doing with Zelina is also really great work. I think he's filling the gap in quite perfectly until Andrade gets back.
Andrade's literally back in like 2 weeks. I was like, I don't even see why everyone couldn't have taken a break. But I guess you need to continue the momentum of this story. Angel Garza is pretty good. And if he becomes a main fixture on Raw, I say more power to him. I wonder if he's still be on 205 Live moving forward. It looks like they're going to take him off the brand. But just because
he's
going to envelop
you. He's on NXT tomorrow.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe it's a swan song. But he's doing pretty good. So, you know what? Angel Garza, you're the man. I'll say that.
Seth and the Disciples get past KO and the crew once again in the main event. Fun main event this week. 8-man tag for the first time the Seth and the Disciples have ever teamed up all together. End it with Joe, KO, and the Viking Raiders being defeated. Joe taking the pin after the stomp. Buddy Murphy pins him. Thought it was a really, really great match, as I said before. I'm really enjoying the Seth character. I love the little nuances to his character that he's done to change it.
I mean, the jacket?
The jacket's hard. The jacket's hard.
That jacket costs? How much do you think that jacket costs? Tell me right now. How much do you think it costs?
$40.
Probably, right?
Yeah, right?
It seems like a good find.
Top man. You found a top man.
No, top man's not $40 for no fucking jacket. Get out of here.
Hawkman, $40 jacket.
Thrifting.
Bro.
Come on. Iowa thrifting. That's what
the
it looked like.
He probably, the jacket's hard.
He probably dyed the thing black. Like, he dyed the fur black. Like, like.
It's very, you know, who I like Marty Skrull's jacket, and that's what his jacket reminds me of.
Interesting. Marty in terms of this entire thing, I know we're getting Seth and the Disciples over, but KO, man. Can't just buy keep fighting. A win.
Just keep fighting.
Can't buy a win. Can't buy. It needs new friends. Because at this point now, everyone's losing.
Heyman loves doing this to his faces sometimes, where he beats them and then gives them that
ask, right?
Yeah, like the he beats them and then they get that one win and then it's almost like all the other losses are absolved.
But so KO's former world champion. So it's like to me, like he's standing next to Samoa Joe and former tag team champions. It's like the fact that they can't even get a win on him. I'm sure it's building up to a major frustration.
It's because I do like the story of Seth, because even in this match, Seth tagged in Buddy at the last second, which led to Joe thinking led to Joe getting the choke on Buddy, which led to Seth once again squeaking past getting the stomp on him. And it happened. It's the same thing that happened in the fist fight where he so happened to luck up. It's like Seth's luck is going to run out. And I do like the story of he's just a slippery heel. They just can't catch him. And I do like that story. And I think the only logical outcome for this would have to be like a cage match or something, right?
I feel like the logical thing is that eventually,
or elimination Seth chamber.
Seth beats something on his own. Like it doesn't even.
I KO think he's still hurt. Yet. I think he's still hurt too. His hand.
Nah, KO just hasn't won yet. Like it's just weird to me. I just hope, you know, I'm wishing for the best. I'm wishing for the best for KO.
He's gonna get it. Rhea Ripley returns to Raw. She's becoming a regular fixture on the show. She squashes Sarah Logan and challenges Charlotte again.
Is the direction clear? Is it clear? Is it crystal clear?
I think it's very clear to me at this point. I think what it bothered it were, you know whose direction worries me? Bailey. But I think the direction is very clear. But also, I think that this is going to help NXT and by proxy Rhea Ripley a lot in the next couple of weeks and months leading up to Mania. Her just showing up immediately gives legitimacy to people wondering who this is where can we watch more of her? I did notice the very not so subtle promotions for her match with Bianca Belair on Sunday at TakeOver and Wednesday nights on NXT. I do love the cross pollination here, and it makes sense because she is waiting for Charlotte to make a move, and by proxy she should be able to be on the show if that's where Charlotte's going to be. So I did like their segment this week.
I agree 100%.
Man, Ricochet versus Lashley. I thought Lashley was really good here, man. Not gonna lie.
You know what? I didn't even pay attention to the match because I knew who was gonna win.
Oh boy.
I legitimately didn't pay attention to the match. My favorite part of the entire thing was the little pre-match promo where Lana starts saying stuff and then Bobby comes in and we're like, yeah, fuck all that. Here's what's really going on. Like, I think we're gonna look back on Lana and Lashley. I wouldn't even say 5 years from now. I think we're going to look back for like 6 months from now and be like, they really don't have any chemistry with one another. Like, the Lana and Lashley.
Lana and Lashley?
Yeah. Nah, they don't have an ounce of chemistry with one another. It doesn't even seem like Lashley enjoys being around Lana.
I think
and who would enjoy being around Lana?
I think once the marriage part was over, they lost the chemistry almost immediately after the marriage thing or the wedding thing.
I don't think they ever had chemistry. It seemed like they were kind of put together. Obviously, they were put together, but it seemed like they were put together and kind of forcing something, especially with the kiss. You're able to force that very, very quickly. But I don't think they ever had chemistry with one another. It seems like the things that Lana says and the things that Bobby say are completely different. And I think it was so most apparent by the promo that they had beforehand, because Lana's saying, like, this is Bobby's dream. He's always wanted this, da 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 da. And then Bobby Lashley, he cuts an entirely kind of, like, different promo of, like, I'm going to beat Ricochet, and Brock Lesnar is going to have to thank me for what's going on. And it's a complete – it's, like, two different tales of promos. It's a – you know, I just think in terms of the whole Ricochet thing, I'm glad they're making him continue to look somewhat presentable before he gets his ass kicked. Has backstage be preempted by the Westminster Kennel Dog Show?
Yes.
Is this really happening in 2020?
They're nice dogs. They look good. They're good-looking dogs.
I know you're a dog person now, but in the year 2000 – their dogs can kick rocks, because Westminster Dog Show used to delay Raw until 11 p.m.
Well, no, it seems to be over now, so we're going to get to backstage.
All right. I'm ready for backstage.
Yeah. Looks like it's over now.
Okay. You know what we can do? Let's wrap up
the show. I think that is it. Yeah, I think that's it for This Week in Wrestling. I was going to talk about the New Japan show from last weekend. I've only watched one match from it, from the Sunday show. So next week I'll have my thoughts about that show and the Naito Kenta match.
Last thing, Matt Hardy looked like a sucker. That's all I got to say about that.
He is a sucker. So he's definitely going out very sad. And
he's going out sad.
We can long form this. We can long form this next week. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Because he's not going to be here next week.
I was going to say that too. That he is. We shouldn't be surprised that he's acting like a hoe, because he's always acted like a hoe. Like, literally, he's always acted like a hoe.
This has been his modus operandi. This has always been his thing, and it's legitimately, and it's the first time I realized that was in 2005 when he got a let go from the company and was essentially carrying on storylines when there was no cameras on but his.
Yeah.
Like,
and also he's the getting
his mark for himself.
Also getting work beat up by the guy who stole your girlfriend. Just hoe talk.
Yeah. Matt Hardy, you know, I don't hate him, but he is the biggest mark for himself. He is his own biggest fan. There is no bigger fan of Matt Hardy than him. And in one hand, that's you can applaud that for someone believing in themselves so much, even if after God, way after their prime. On the other hand, it's kind of sad because no one nearly believes in you the amount that you believe in you.
Or his wife. Is that the sirens? Is that the wrap it up sirens?
I think that's the wrap it up sirens. Let's get out of here.
All right. So until next week, this has been The Week in Pro Wrestling with myself and Meals. Follow us at OGJohnny5 and Meals TV on Twitter and Instagram too. But check us out next week. We'll have another Mania moment for you. We'll be talking about the build to Super Showdown and WrestleMania from Tampa. Until next week, peace out.
Happy Black History Month.
Racial angle.